right. I'm very excited to have our next guest on because I've had a couple of interactions with him, but he's been posting a lot of very cool stuff on social media. A guy called Andre Farrow. I've just got to show you this. Andre, I'm going to bring you on, but I want you to just explain. Here he is. Hey, Andre, how's it? How are you? You can't hear me? Oh, Jesus. Guys, won't you just sort that out quickly? Let me show you this. This is the thumbnail they put together for this morning's show. Check Andre's hair in there. He looks like he's in the Jackson 5. And that's hilarious. Producers, won't you just sort out Andre's sound so I can bring him back on? First of all, I got to say, because I got a lot of shit from Ben whenever we'd make a thumbnail for the show. That is how I actually look. You can tell in real time. So mine is the most up to date. Leanne, it's maybe a couple of years ago. I'm thinking like around 12 years ago when we started Cliff Central. That was a picture that we did on a shoot there. So maybe, you know, maybe a more recent picture for Leanne. But Andre, he looks like either Tito or Marlon or Jermaine Jackson. I'm not sure which one. But that is not how he looks anymore. Let me see if I can get him on now. Hey, Andre, how's it? Can you hear us now?
Okay, I still. Can you hear me?
We can hear you, yeah. I can hear you.
Okay, there we go. All right, there we go.
Okay, he's on. Where the hell does this picture come from? Because you gave us that picture of you looking like you're in the Jackson 5. What's that?
Say again?
Huh?
Oh, the photo, the picture I sent you.
Where's that from?
I was 29, almost 30. Yeah. It was my first ever attempt at trying to model. Because okay, I had afro.
Let me give everybody an idea of your bio quickly, because you are an entertainer, but you also were a senior center analyst at BMW for a while, which is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You did this modeling that you pointed to already. You also worked in radio. You still work in radio. You have a weekend show, is that right?
Yeah, weekend show on Impact Radio 103.
How's radio, dude? How's that going? I haven't checked in with my radio people for a long time. How's Impact Radio? Wasn't that the Christian station, Impact Radio?
Yes, it's the Christian radio station in Pretoria. Yeah, no, it's going wonderful. Yes. So what happened was I was like on and off. So before I started at BMW, I was in the IT world, I was at Impact Radio. And then from Impact Radio, I went over into the corporate. And then I was, for 6 years, I was out of radio. And then my wife, she just said to me the one day, listen here, but I think you should get back into radio because I can see you missing it because you start doing what I would do is we would be listening to radio in the car with my kids. And then before the DJ comes on, I would mute the DJ and I would talk like I'm on the show. And then my wife would be like, nah, bro, like, I think you need to get back onto radio because the kids are actually enjoying the station. But yeah, you coming up with your own thing. So I was like, nah, okay, cool. I'm going to. And then, of course, you know, I got back on radio and it's going well. It's going well.
Well, I'm just looking at all the other stuff here. You've been nominated for MTN Radio Awards. You didn't win, though. I mean, that's disappointing.
Yeah.
Very disappointing. We usually only have winners. We usually don't allow people who are just nominees on the show. But I'll let this pass for today.
Ah, thanks. You know what? Next time. I don't know how I'll do next time, but next time. I'll definitely try next time.
One of the places that we've interacted a little bit with is with the Truth Report, which we both do some work for. And the Truth Report really is about giving people an alternative to traditional media in South Africa when it comes to politics, especially. And there's so much going on in this country that there's never a dull day, right? But do you find, compared to the radio stuff, which in your case on Impact isn't always political? I mean, it can sometimes be, I'm sure. But you're quite outspoken on the Truth Report. You've had quite a lot to say about very controversial issues, and you don't mince your words.
Yeah, no. So with radio, to see that it is a Christian radio station, you know, I keep by the rules and regulations required of me.
Right. Yeah.
And the beautiful thing is I can put on many caps. You know what I mean? So with a Christian side, it does infiltrate the politics and it does infiltrate the culture. And so you can bring it all together so what I've done is I've always said, okay, so this is what politics is showing us. This is what the world is showing us. But let me show you from the Christian aspect. So I always have a Christian aspect on what's happening over this side. So with Truth Report, it's really allowed me to kind of be like, I can spread further wings in a sense of, you know, I can say what I want to say. You know, I can bring it across. If it has to be a bit strong, I can bring it across strong. And and so it allowed me to just say, you know, what every South African is thinking. I sat with a guy called Andre LaRue yesterday, and he just said it's nice to hear someone say common sense things. You know, the simple things in life. And I think we've lost that completely. I don't know. I saw your story this morning. Your story was so funny. And I saw it and I realized what's so crazy is that it's 2026. We're creating AI. Like AI is literally like bleeding over, man. Everybody's in AI. Everybody's using AI. But yet we do not know what a woman is, which it's like principle and the foundation of a man and a woman, yet we do not know, you know, like what a woman is. And I saw your story this way. I had a good laugh because I was just like, it's crazy that we are living in a world that is like, it's so like, it pulls one side, then it pulls the other side, but yet there's no common ground. And there's this wrestle of the two sides, you know?
Well, I like that your handle is common sense, right? That's your social media handle, Common Sense SA. And there's also a brilliant account that I follow called The Common Sense, which our friend Franz Grenier has quite a lot to do with. They put out incredible research on South Africa. Just this week, they published a story about how the overwhelming majority of supporters of every political party and people in rural South Africa, black, white, Indian, colored, it makes no difference. Everybody has started to rely on themselves more than they do on government and realized that government is not going to help them in this country, which is amazing because they surveyed some, I think, 20,000 people to put that report together.
Wow.
So I would encourage anybody to go and follow the Common Sense and the work they do because it's really, really interesting. But you call yourself Common Sense. Yeah. And I do think most South Africans, the average South African, has quite a lot of common sense. You know, we were talking to Pete earlier from Ask Mandla. And, you know, domestic workers, they know how much they are owed at the end of every month. South Africans are, we're mostly quite sensible about stuff like that. We don't have, like, you look at these first world people who are debating things like transgender bathrooms. I mean, for the average South African, that's not a thing they need to be. You don't need to explain gender and sex to them. They're like, man, woman, they get it, right? South Africans like common sense. We don't like being talked down to by either pseudo intellectuals who've spent too much time in universities making shit up and changing the meaning of words. And we also don't like dumb stuff, just deliberately dumb stuff. So this is obviously, for you, it's a great place to play. I saw you had quite a lot to say about Naledi Pandor and her comments recently about academia. Do you want to tell us about that? Andre? Is he frozen? What's happened to him? Oy, oy, oy. Okay, well, we'll try and get him back. And what's going on with that guy's connection? I mean, he may have common sense, but he's got a shit connection. That much is true. Just quickly in between, while we're doing all of this, there's a little bit of other news that is going on. There's stuff. There's always stuff in the news in this country. And by the way, if you want to find out what's happening in the news, we've of course got the daily briefing, which is available every day. We're going to be subscribing from Tuesday. the 1st of September. I've held back on announcing the exact date because we wanted to get everything in order so that there was no confusion, there was no complication. We're trying to make it as simple as possible. If you've subscribed to any other paid podcasts anywhere in the world, you'll see it's a pretty straightforward process. We've tried to keep it in line with all of that. It'll be 48 Rand a month. And then you can also, if you want to, you could buy the 6 month or the 12 month. There are discounts involved there. But that starts on Tuesday. And if you've been following that up to now, you will know that it's there to make you sound smarter. It's there to fill you in. It's there to position you in the world. All the things that you need without taking up hours and hours of your day. So it's getting better and better, and we've had hugely positive feedback from everybody while we've been trialing free episodes for the last 3 months. And if you like it, then you may want to subscribe to it as well. I know everybody's a little bit hard-pressed for having to spend on extra things at the moment. Nobody's got extra money lying around. But if we want to make this thing work and we want to make it really successful, going to require a little bit of capital to keep expanding. I want to customize it eventually. So you can select categories where you can go, I want more of this. I don't want so much politics. I want more South African stuff or less South African stuff. We will make it according to all of that. But it's going to need some investment and time and effort and energy and capital from our side. So we also want you to feel like, you know, if you're paying for something, it's worth it. Because the ultimate cost of content, if you don't charge for it, is zero, which is also the value of that content if you don't charge for it. So that's the way we're looking at things. And I want this to be successful. Haven't missed an episode of the Daily Briefing. So good, Gareth. Thank you very much. That's nice to see in the comment section. I'll pay if you bring on a machosha. Well, we're still going to do things like that on this show. Absolutely. I'll cancel my... I think he means UIF for the Daily Briefing, but thank you, Bitcoin Boot. let go of the domestic and sign up, says C23. Okay, yeah, you can do all of that. Have we got Andre back? Where is he? I don't know where this guy is. Just completely cut out. His power tripped. Oh, Jesus, it's such a South African story. Andre, what the hell? Your power tripped?
Yeah. My power literally, I literally heard that the switchboard click and I went, ah, oh, okay. Yeah. You know, there's only certain Afrikaans words.
It's not Naledi Say Pando again? Who walked into your house and went to your switchboard just before you said something shit about her.
Lazaria, that lady and I, we have a love-hate relationship at the moment. Yeah, no, I had a lot to say because I think it's ridiculous that you're complaining about a group of South Africans, you know, just wanting a better future. And they actually, you know, it's not about just them saying things. It's actually they're doing it, doing something about it. So it's amazing to see that a beautiful university wants to be, you know, is being built of 3.2 billion. And yeah, you've got a XXX minister complaining about it just because it's white Afrikaners. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, show me evidence of what you have done for the South African people. Because going to the locations and celebrating a JoJo water tank, as this is a great investment.
That happened this week, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm just like,
a JoJo water tank, and they had like a whole government delegation there, and they're cutting ribbons. And I'm like, you've given people a shitty water tank instead of laying on plumbed in water that actually comes out of a tap when you open it, and you're congratulating yourself. And by the way, how much did you say academia is costing?
3.2 billion.
Okay. Now, I know for a fact that there's a piece of a road on the Stadtpansberg Road that they've been working on for, I don't know, 6 years, and it already cost more than 5 billion rand to do this non-finished, incomplete road. The government takes 5 billion rand to build a road, and these guys from Solidarity and all the sponsors and the contributors, they're building a whole university, which will become, I have no doubt, the best university in South Africa in the next 5 years.
It will.
That cost them.
It will
cost them two thirds of that. It's amazing.
Yeah,
that's phenomenal.
That And that speaks about the people's character. You know what I mean? Like it speaks about people's character in a sense of like, what are we going to invest into, instead of just having this typical political, typical politician mindset where, you know, it's like everything what I've done. And this is the thing about politicians, when it comes to photo ops, they want to show you what they have done. But then you have people, you know, organizations like Solidaritate and, you know, all these other people coming around, organizations, you know, giving. They don't want to show it. Like, they don't want to stand there and be like, look what we've done. It's more, it's like people are giving in secret because at the end of the day, let's invest in the future of this nation. You know, I just heard Kali Creel was talking about how they've taken Afrikaans out of universities. And I thought, but it's, what is it? Yeah. The third most spoken language in the country.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, and Afrikaans is across the board. Eh? It's not just white or colored. It's like across the board. Everybody, sure. You know, I saw, you know, there's a high school here in Pretoria East, beautiful high school called Gasfontein. Dude, there is white, black, colored, in all South Africans are at that school. But you must hear them speak Afrikaans. That's the language that they're speaking. And I'm just like, why do we want to get rid of, like, why are they so desperate to get rid of Afrikaans?
But Andre, that's the main reason that Kali and a bunch of these other guys got together and decided we need to build our own university, because it wasn't that they were unhappy about black people going to the University of Pretoria, for example, or Stellenbosch. It was that their medium of instruction was being downgraded or removed completely. And if you grew up speaking Afrikaans, you want to learn in Afrikaans, right? I wonder how this government feels about the fact that they have not built a university for every other language group. I wonder how they feel about the fact that they have not expanded and improved education. We spend, as a country, more than proportionally, right, per capita, we spend more than any other country in the world on education, or we're certainly in the top four from the figures that I saw just the other day. And yet, we get the cuckest results. We have huge illiteracy problems. The inability for someone who's finished primary school in South Africa to be able to add, subtract, multiply, and divide, and speak properly using, you know, language for understanding, for meaning. It's outrageous that these are the people who have the temerity to talk about like an organized group of self-funded contributors. These are not like wealthy Afrikaans donors. Some of the people who give money to Solidarity every month are laborers. They're laborers. They are people who work the land or machines or build or make things with their hands. And then you're going to go and criticize them because they want a place to send their kids where they can learn in their own language. It's outrageous.
It is. It is. And you know what? So what gets me, like, I'm like, wait, hold up, you know, is that they live in this past mentality. And this is how liberation movements work. They can never step into what needs required. You know what I mean? Like, they're not built for government. Like, they're not built for government. You know what I mean? And it's amazing, like, you and I, we get to see how South Africans are starting to be like, you know what? I'd rather listen to Gareth Cliff, or I'd rather listen to, you know, Joe Emilio, or I'd rather listen to Ronaldo. You know, like people are just deciding, you know what, we're sick and tired of this old parrot that keeps on going, but there's no results. And so,
well, I want to ask you about this because I've summarized that philosophy into one line. And I told the story on the show, which I'm not going to tell again, of where the line comes from. But when I hear the ANC, and I heard Fikile this week talking about, you know, give us another chance. That's the ANC slogan for this election. It's ridiculous, right? I mean, you've run out. The best you can come up with is give us another chance. I mean, how pathetic do you have to be? But the philosophy that guides a lot of these guys who are in the ANC, and you know, someone brought up Julius, who's still, we're still waiting for him to finish building that school he promised he was going to build. Remember? Remember the EFF said they were going to build a school? Here's the philosophy in one line. Why you never give me? That's the philosophy. I'm gonna have t-shirts made. I'm gonna have t-shirts made, which we will be selling on my site, that say why you never give me. Because that is the philosophy of the ANC. Whether you're a rich billionaire cadre who's been given hundreds of tenders, and we see all of these people. I mean, there's that one dreadful Cat Matlala who's in front of the Matlanga Commission at the moment. Dude. And this guy's been handed money for shit that he didn't even do properly. And yet his attitude still, you can see him in front of those commissioners. It's why you never give me, right?
And it's this audacity to rock up looking like $1 billion. And I'm just like, bro, like, dude, like South Africans are struggling. And here you come sit in front of this commission and you're like, no, you know, here's my Gucci bag, my Gucci.
Did you
bro,
Colin Malachi, who was, I think he was head of the ANC Youth League for a while, might still be for all I know, but he pitched up at some press conference. He was wearing Louis Vuitton shoes, the LV logo all over, but the real thing, not Fong Kong, LV jeans with the little LVs all over them. I mean, the branding, obviously, if you have no personality and you have no value, then putting LVs all over you is going to suddenly make you valuable. An LV shirt and jacket. They reckon his whole outfit costs something like 107. This is obviously TikTok and Instagram mathematics, but they reckon it's worth 170,000 rand, that one outfit he was wearing as a man. I mean, you know, you get Imogen, what's his name, who was it in the Ekuruleni government. She pitched up in like a 200,000 rand outfit one day. But that's a woman, and, you know, women will spend outrageous money on bags and shoes and shit. This is a guy. This is a man. How little self-respect do you have to have, not only for yourself, to wear that shit, because it's shit. It's outrageously expensive shit. But then you also are thumbing your nose at the poor. You're like saying, ah, look at me in my LV outfit, you know, and you're poor. Yeah. You can't even afford. You can't afford, you know, why you never give me. And then when you do give him, then he just takes it all. Fuck.
Yeah. And you know, and man, the thing with South Africans, and I love this, is that they starting to go like, you know what? You guys are a bunch of clowns. Like, really. Like,
yes, they are.
Like, all that you do is to, why you give me, you know, that kind of mentality. Like, and I love how South Africans, I don't know if you're picking this up, Gareth, like, but I love how South Africans are like banding together now. You know what I mean? It's no more just like, it's white day or color day, or, you know, it's like everybody's coming together and going, you know what? These guys are actually a bunch of clowns. And South Africa deserves more. And we deserve better than this. Because here you have a politician that has been a politician for decades saying, give us a second chance. And I'm like, bro, South Africa is past the second chance. We know it's more than second
chance.
This isn't
a second chance. This is 30 years. You know, the ANC is approaching. The ANC is approaching the same milestone. Like, if they stay the majority party in South Africa for another, I think, one or two elections, they will have been in power as the majority party for as long as apartheid existed. You know that?
Yes. Yeah.
And when that happens, then as soon as they cross that line of, like, they've been around longer than apartheid and people are still suffering and the ordinary South African has not improved their life or their quality of life, then these guys have nothing left to fall back on, because it's not just a second chance. This is about an eighth chance. And so far, I mean, everybody who's worried about like MK and Zuma, I'm like, Cyril's worse, man. Cyril is worse. So that's where do you see people banding together? Where do you see people coming together and saying we've had enough of this shit in your own life?
Okay, so for me, it's just that common sense understanding of what is important for us. Of course, jobs, putting bread on the table for us, our schooling, our infrastructure. Looking at it today, it is shocking to see that just down my road, there's 6 potholes. So when an oak drives there, if you don't have a 4x4, sorry. So it's just the infrastructure that is looking horrible. Gareth, you know what the shocker is? I went to and fetch my kids from school, and we're not far from the school. So I take a walk to go pick them up, you know, and we get to walk and we get to talk as a family. And so I'm walking and my daughter picked this up. I already saw it, but she picked it up. She's only 9 years old, and she saw the rubbish bins over flooding. Like, I mean, it looked horrible. And yeah. She looked at me and she said, "Dad, why is the street so dirty?" It's a 9-year-old. And I looked at her and I said, well, so I gave her kind of like a short breakdown, but also like a breakdown that she can understand. And I said to her, well, there's people that are responsible for these things because taxpayers pay for this, but yet they cannot do the simple things. And so for South Africans, we are all coming together on this common ground and saying, guys, There's important things that we need to carry on with our lives. Like, I always believe, like, the government is not there to fix everything. No, they're not there to fix everything. And I agree with you. I heard you earlier on. You said you don't trust the politicians. I also don't trust politicians. Like, I'm very cautious with what they say, because they say one thing today and they do another thing tomorrow. And I think that's why you and I and so many other podcasters or YouTubers are in this field, is because we're sick and tired of just you guys talking the same thing over and over and doing absolutely nothing. And so we get to keep you accountable for the things that you promised to the South African people.
Well, so I mean, you mentioned two things here that I just want to refer to quickly, because I think they're both very valuable. So first of all, there are things we can blame the government for, and there are things that the government is paid through our taxes, which they take at gunpoint. They're paid to do, right? So things like collecting the rubbish, making sure there's electricity, water, the roads work, all that kind of shit. That's basic. That's like, before we get to talking about universal health care or a social safety net or social grants or any of that, that shit is like 3 or 4 degrees down. First, make sure that the people who are paying the taxes are getting the basics. And another basic thing, obviously, is to keep the borders secure, because I know you've got stuff to say about March and March, which we'll get to in a second. Yeah. But the one thing government is not responsible for, and your story of walking your daughter to school is instructive here. They are not responsible for families. They're not responsible for dads doing their job. We know we've got a massive fatherlessness problem in this country.
Yeah.
A lot of dads. Yeah. You know, there's some horrific statistic from Home Affairs about how, you know, close to half of the kids whose births are registered, you have to get a birth certificate. There is no dad on the birth certificate. There is no dad in the registration documents. That is a major issue. And we can't blame government for that, right? And we want to talk about the politicians, what assholes they are, and that's fair. But we need to look ourselves in the mirror and say, what is going on with all the single moms, deadbeat dads, dads who are not there on the birth certificate or even involved in the kid's life at all. Sometimes the mom and the kid have no idea who the dad is. And that's a big issue. Yeah. And I know you've got feelings about that, because you, first of all, you are a dad. Second of all, you're a Christian. Third of all, you believe in the family. So tell me how you feel about that stuff, because that really worries me, man. That keeps me up at night.
Yeah, that is a scary statistics if you look at it, because if you look at South Africa, and a lot of the times people don't want to touch on this topic, Gareth. Like, I've had a few discussions, like, people don't want to touch on this topic because it's very sensitive. It's a sore thing that we have in South Africa. 63% across all boards, 63% of fatherless homes. And so fathers play a massive role. Like, we play a massive role, not just in our families, but in our communities as well. And so for me being a father, you know, it breaks my heart that, and I agree with Charlie Kirk when he said this, like this thing of like fathers just being, you know, men just being this thing. It's all about, and sorry for the kids that are like, sorry if you hear this, but it's almost this mentality, the orgasm matters most, but not the responsibility afterwards.
Yeah.
And you hear something like that, and it makes you think, wait, hold up. Have we become so spineless in a sense that we care more about ourselves than the responsibilities that we have to carry? Now, I take my hat off for the single moms. I feel, man, I salute the, especially the single moms in across the board. Like they have to juggle three things at the same time. But I also said this to this one lady in a discussion. I said, but there's also this thing of it's your responsibility who you choose. Because sometimes you can blame the guy, but there's also another flip to the coin of saying, hey, you also have a responsibility of choosing the right partner.
Yes, correct.
Choosing the right husband.
There is responsibility on both sides here. And I'm glad you brought that up because it is very unfashionable. Nobody wants to talk about the responsibility that women have in, you know, women in this country are by far the ones who file for divorces more than men do. That's a thing nobody wants to talk about. They don't want to talk about how a lot of these moms have deliberately excluded the father of their child, how custody always goes in the woman's favor, and the result of all of that men go, okay, well, if this is how, and I'm not by any means blaming women for this, but we don't talk about how if men are constantly pushed away, eventually they go, you know what? I don't want this. I'd rather stay single. I'd rather not have these responsibilities. And if she gets pregnant and she wants to go and be a single mom, well, that's fine. That suits me down to the ground. And that's why so many men don't pay maintenance. And I mean, listen, there are asshole men out there who are doing all the wrong things. And society does not support and advocate for them, quite rightly. But society seems to advocate for and support women who behave just as irresponsibly, and they are allowed to—they're allowed to get away with this with no accountability at all. So it's about time we just equalize those playing fields, if you ask me.
And it's you actually brought it. You made a great statement there, because so many times, you know, it's like the one people look at the one and go, yeah, but it's this one's fault. And then the other, no, but actually if we come together and say, guys, listen, you know, men and women, we have a responsibility. And that's why it breaks my heart that we have men in this country that the only thing they think about is themselves. And I'm talking about that 62%. I'm talking about those guys that are just like, you know, listen, I'm going to make a child. I know I made a child, but I'm not going to take and I'm going to say it like it is. That is a spineless man that at the end of the day, he will come to you and I and say, no, but I'm a man. I'll be like, no. If you go look at what a man is, a man is someone that takes responsibility for all of his actions. And he admits when he's wrong, and he carries on with what is required from us. You know, I have four kids, Gareth. Like, listen, I'm not a dad of one. I'm a dad of four.
You've been
one
busy.
Woman. Hey, bruh. Like one woman. It's not like I was out there. No. Four kids with one woman. And by the grace of God, we get to enjoy what family is all about. Like, Gareth, my heart is full. Like, I get to do, like, what we're doing now is amazing. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
But for me, when I sit by my dining room table and I hear the chattering going on and I hear the conversations and the laughter, and sometimes there's a bit of irritation here and there because it's boys and girls, man, that fills my heart. And it breaks me that these men are missing out moments like this that is so critical for their young people's lives that
finish your point.
Yeah. So that, you know, we create a culture of tradition where my sons can take on the responsibilities that is required from him, and they can just keep going. And that's where we change. My dad always used to say, make up your own bed first before you go change the world. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, first sort yourself out, because the world's going to point back at you, Gareth, and say, yeah, but aren't you that guy? Aren't you this guy? You know what I mean? So to the men, go make up your bed, clean your yard first, and then when God has opened a door for you to play in a public light, go then and change the communities. But your first number one responsibility, and this men don't want to hear, but it's the absolute truth, is your wife and your kids, your family. Mm-hmm. And that's what I stand on.
Keep your own house clean before you start worrying about other people and the neighborhood.
Yeah.
So there's a really amazing story going on in America at the moment. There's this terrible, terrible human being called Lindsay Clancy, I think is her name.
Clancy, yes.
She strangled her three kids to death. And she's now on trial in America. And what is fascinating about this, because it's become the biggest story in America, despite, you know, the Strait of Hormuz and everything else, the biggest story in America, because millions of insane women have become like fangirls of this Clancy bitch. And this is a woman who murdered her own children. And you've got these women on, they've raised over $1 million for her on GoFundMe. And you've got people posting videos saying that they support her and they know how she feels. They know what she's going through and basically trying to remove accountability from her because they say, oh, well, she had a psychotic break or she suffers from mental health problems. And therefore we need to be empathetic with someone who executed her own three children. And I would just say, like, if you are one of those people who supports a mother who executes her three children, and if you saw the crime scene, you wouldn't be empathetic. I can promise you that.
Yeah.
But you got these crazy women all over America who are supporting Lindsay Clancy. And I've got to say, if you know one of those people, if you have a friend or even an acquaintance who is supporting Lindsay Clancy, you got to get the hell away from that woman because she is pure, unadulterated evil. Anyone who would aid and abet and support a mother who kills her own three children, even if she had a psychotic break, there's no excuse for that. Those are the most dangerous kind. Just like we talk about toxic masculinity, which is a good topic to talk about, and we know what that looks like. We've got to talk about toxic femininity because this is the most perfect example of it. These women are absolutely certifiable and should be kept away from children. If they have children, those children should be put somewhere safe because these women trying to make excuses for this crazy Clancy bitch, this really worries me.
And you know what's so crazy about this is that you hit it on the head. You spoke about they direct this with empathy. No, but we should have hold up.
What about empathy for the children? What about empathy for the husband who's left? He's the only one who's alive. He's the only living victim of this crime.
You know what I mean? And then you know, with all due respect, it's like, we should run on this empathy emotion that she's listen here, let's be clear. If a man had to do this, what she has done, you will not see empathy. You will not, they will not quite run on that empathy train. They will go, no, he's a man, he did this, he must take responsibility. You know what I mean? But Gareth, you know what's also What's amazing about this thing that it highlighted is that men are asking their girlfriends in America, do you support this lady? And the girlfriends are like, yes. And the guys are breaking up. There's literally guys are just like, I'm sorry, I can't be in a relationship with someone like this.
I don't think a lot of the people who listen to or watch this show or your stuff on Truth Report or hear you on Impact, I don't think a lot of those ladies are going to be supporters of Lindsay Clancy in any which way. But I would suggest that if you are in any way, if you find yourself feeling sympathy for that woman, you have a problem. You have a serious problem. You do not know what evil looks like. You have forgotten the basic distinctions between good and evil, and you are a danger to yourself and to the people you love. and you have to be put away. You have to be clapped in irons or put in a straitjacket and kept away from the rest of society because you're a psychopath.
And you know what's so crazy is like she admitted. Like, let's go to the evidence. Let's not run on an emotional
thing. She's confessed.
Let's look at the evidence. She confessed.
She jumped off the balcony and she's paralyzed now, apparently. She's in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
That's another reason some of these people are like feeling sorry for her. And she did this. Nobody else was involved. It was her.
Mm-hmm. And you know what? If all the evidence shows, she sent her husband to go to the shop. She knew what she was doing. She planned it out purposefully how things are going to happen. It breaks my heart that we live in a world today where people, when they see bad, they think that's good. But when they see good, they see bad. And it's like you and I, we talk about these things. And I know people are going to be like, I got that, Gavcliff, Andre, what. But at the end of the day, let's look at the facts. Let's put feelings aside. Let's put that aside because that's not going to assist in this matter. Let's look at the facts. And the fact shows that she's guilty. Guilty. But the mere fact that you have people that gave money to a murderer, $1 million, is shocking.
I think it's even more than that.
The world is upside down. It's more than that. The world is upside down.
You got to think about how sick in the head you'd have to be to make a video of yourself supporting this woman and going, I know how we've all been there, you know? By the way, you can find these videos. There are Reddits, subreddits full of this stuff. Mm. It's very disturbing to me. You know, people are always worried about like men being chauvinist or the glass ceiling or unequal pay or those are all very valid concerns, but they come way after the ability of a person to kill their own kids because they're so self-absorbed. They're so selfish. The world, they want no responsibility, but they want all of the good stuff. They want to be the CEO and they want to have a great life and they want to be able to buy all the products that they need and get the medicine and the care and the love, and they want to tell you how they're looking for a guy who's a 10 out of 10. But when it comes to responsibility, we shouldn't be too hard on her. She was going through a psychotic mental health episode. Fuck off.
And you know what, Gareth, now, like my wife gave birth to 4 children. Mm-hmm. And yes, there were a bit of struggles in the beginning. But at the end of the day, there are moms that have done amazing things for their children. They sacrificed careers. They're at home. They're raising their children up. They, you know, putting in the time. And for those moms, I salute 100%. I got your back. But for that percentage of women that is supporting a murderer, for me, I go, we are losing something up here, bro. We are like... Are they seeing what you and I are seeing, or is there something off? Because do you give for a murderer that literally slaughtered her children?
Well, you know, again,
all of a sudden
this is probably not a story most South Africans would even be aware of because it's not a big news story in this country. But I'm not as you get crazy people. You get people who do terrible things because they are just crazy. They're dangerous, right?
Yeah.
And I suppose there's very little we can do about that. That father went off to the shops thinking, maybe I should get the kids a sweet each or whatever. And next thing he knows, he gets home to this absolute carnage. And the 3 kids that he loved are gone. Mm. And his wife is lying on the floor a story down with her legs broken, paralyzed. And now you have to go to her murder trial. I mean, this guy's life is ruined forever and all his hopes and dreams are dashed against the wall. But the thing that worries me is not this crazy one insane woman. It's the people who are supporting her. That's what bothers
me. True.
And I think there's a lesson in this.
Anyway. All right. So, That is heavy to see this, and you think, well,
it's horrible.
What's going on?
It's horrible. But
yeah, it's horrible. It's horrible.
Tell me about your feelings, because you watched that again. South Africa is a common sense place mostly, thank goodness.
Mm.
March and March met with AfriForum.
Yeah.
These two, yeah. they couldn't be more different. We've been told by the same. By the way, the same media has told us that March and March are these terrible xenophobic, horrible people who just want to chase everyone out of the country because they come from somewhere else or speak a different language or look different or whatever.
Mm.
And they've also told us AfriForum are this massively reactionary, backward Afrikaans group that only looks after Afrikaners and they want to bring back apartheid. That's what the media has told us about these two groups. And yet these two groups, which are so far apart, came together, had a very productive meeting, and who knows, they might end up working together.
Yeah, you know, so what's so amazing about that whole situation is that they literally, what the media has been preaching to South African people for so long, they literally just in one moment come together and they have a conversation about what they want to see South Africa look like. And I love it because for me, I look at the two organizations, I look at the two groups, and I'm going, this is what we should be actually doing. Coming together, yes, we might not agree on certain things, but actually come together and go, you know what? You want a better South Africa. I want a better South Africa. Let's work on it together. And this truly shook the elite, like, you know, your legacy media. It shook them because they've been pushing a narrative for years. Nah, this. South African xenophobia. Like, bro, South Africans are the most welcoming and loving people on planet Earth. Yeah, you'll have your little 0.something% that is like, ah. But at the end of the day, South Africans are actually loving people. We want people to come and experience the South Africa that we have. You know what I mean? So to have, and also this, you know, I was laughed at the other day when I said, nah, I back AfriForum. I like them. And they were like, what? Bruh, have you seen yourself in the mirror? I was like, brother, it's not about my skin color, bro. They're doing what communities should be doing. You know what I mean? I said the other day in a video, I said, this was like 2 years ago in a video. I said, yeah, you know what? We were talking about Orania, and I was talking about, you know what? If you look at the infrastructure, they have the second best infrastructure in South Africa. And I went, wait, but these are people that are not depending on government support. They're just like doing their own thing. And I realized, like, you know what? Why don't we also start just doing our own thing? We can see that pothole. We can see that water leak. Why must we wait 2-3 months before something happens instead of taking action and just going, no, we'll sort it out ourselves? And so for me, I like AfriForum, and a lot of people don't like it when I say that. And I know this is going to be clipped out, but I like AfriForum, and I like what they're doing for the, you know, for, and it's not just for Afrikaans people. It's actually, I've heard multiple stories where they've stepped in and assist South Africans, all South Africans.
Well, they got involved in gender-based violence cases with black women who couldn't find support anywhere else. And old Harry Nell, who, you know, was the prosecutor on the Oscar Pistorius story, he works for AfriForum's legal division now. He's done a number of amazingly humanitarian and essentially, like, out of the kindness of AfriForum's wallet and heart, supported issues which have had nothing to do with just white Afrikaners.
Afrikaans,
so you cannot level that criticism at them. They've probably done, I mean, they've certainly done more than the ANC Women's League have done for women in South Africa.
For women.
You know?
Yeah. The mere fact that you have the, you know, this last year with Cyril Ramaphosa, it was a G7. I think it was a G7 last year. And then all of a sudden, Joburg gets cleaned up. Then all of a sudden, organizations that actually are fighting G20, against gender-based violence. Yeah, the G20, sorry. And you have this, and you have all of a sudden Cyril Ramaphosa standing up and saying, no, guys, this is a crisis. And I'm thinking, wait, hold up. just because you've got other countries coming to this country, now all of a sudden it's like, guys, this is a national disaster. And I'm going, whoa. Women have been facing this for how many years, but your own ANC Women's League is not defending. We know for a fact that there's stuff happening in political parties that if those things have to come out into the light, people will be like, but isn't this the guys that are supporting, you know, that's fighting against gender-based violence or the way you treat women or, you know, sexual assaults or anything like that. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And so for me, I just think it's hypocritical for you to run on the backs of these organizations running and saving kids' lives and women's lives. And yet here you come and take the spotlight from them when the whole world is going to watch South Africa. Now you take the spotlight. I think that is a spineless response from a government or a political party to do that, because these people have been fighting for how many years, to a point where I know some of them were thrown into prison because they're standing up for the children and women. But because, yep. guys, you know what I mean? So for me, I just think, and this is what gets my blood boiling to a point. I know my mother's watching this. So Gareth, I'm behaving myself.
You better be careful.
My mother.
Yeah, of course.
Mom,
no foul language. And then, no foul language, no rude hand gestures. Yeah.
You understand what I mean? So, you know, the level of respect I have for the women in my life, my wife, my mother, my grandmother, my aunts, my daughters, my nieces, you know, it's, we are called as men to protect, man. And I'm going to point out to the men, if you raise your hand, if you're shouting and screaming at the women in your life, you got to go check yourself. Because I promise you, if you have a neighbor like myself or like Gareth, and I hear that or I see that, I promise you, it's not going to be a thing of knocking on your door gently and asking you nicely, can you just stop that? No, I'm going to show you what loving a neighbor actually means. You know, take you outside and quickly talk to you like a man, but in a different way. And for me, here in South Africa, we need to address this and say to the men, if you have an alcoholic problem, if you have a drinking problem, stop it. If you have a porn addiction, stop it. Like, guys, we got to wake up and smell the coffee here, man. Like, we can't carry on like this. This country deserves men that are acting like men, taking care, taking the responsibility. Stop running to things to quickly get yourself offloaded, because that's not how it should be. You know, I am tired of men having this thing of, no, bro. Like, listen, we all as men, we face stuff, bro. We face stuff. Get men around you that can keep you accountable, that can say to you, hey, but that drinking, I saw Saturday night on Zetra Braai, that brandy and coke, you had six glasses, bro. Like, hey, let's stop it now. You know, let's talk about it. Because I saw how you spoke to your wife after the first brandy and coke. You know what I mean?
You can't hear me. Sorry, it was my fault.
There we go.
Everybody has something to do, and everybody has a duty to perform. And
yeah.
I love that. The whole conversation between you and me has been about what we can do rather than what we expect everyone else to do for us, right?
Mm.
Yeah, and yeah. I think that's useful, Andre. I think that's we can all leave this conversation today and go into our weekend knowing that the way to fix the world and the way to fix South Africa and the way to fix your own neighborhood and then your house, obviously go in reverse order, is to start with, like, what can I do? And, you know, you're a great example of that. I mean, no one is perfect. And we have this bizarre idea that we have to get everything right all the time. And that's impossible. We're not divine. We don't have infallibility. We're going to screw up a lot. But the fact that it starts with you, it's like, what can I do? I think that's just absolutely fantastic. That's great.
And I want to add on to that because I agree with you, we're not perfect. We're not preaching perfection here. What we're preaching is common sense and what is the right thing. It's difficult to do the right thing. You know what I mean? It is difficult. But if I can encourage people, just look at what you have today. Be grateful for what you have today. Because yesterday is the past. Today is the present. That's why it's a gift. And the future is unknown. But what we have today, we can actually take that and go, okay, what good can I do with today? You know what I mean? Gareth, it broke my heart. A lady, I think she was 72 years old. She was recommended to us. She's a domestic worker. And when I paid her for the day and I asked her a question, where do you come from? Like, where do you live? And she said, Andre, I live 2 hours away from Pretoria. She's a South African. She's a grandmother. She's looking after grandchildren. And I asked her, and I think people, the way we actually can love on one another is asking each other questions. And I asked her this thing, and I said, how many buses or taxis must you take to get here? She said, 4.
Yeah. Yeah.
It broke my heart to such a way, and I thought to myself, what? And afterwards, I didn't say anything to her, but afterwards, and I just thought, she's literally going to use what she earned today. 60% of that is going to transport.
Yeah,
and it broke my heart because
this is the reality.
It made me realize that. What you have, you should be grateful for. But what impact you can have on other people's lives, take that opportunity, you know? Because the way people know that you have love and the way people know that you have God and Jesus in your life is by the way you love on others. And that's the beauty of you know, being in this country is that my neighbor, just across, like literally just across here, I'm looking at their roof. When we moved in, they are very old Afrikaans couple. Mm-hmm. Gareth, that auntie made a milk tart for us, bro. Like, and she brought, bro, I was like, yeah, no, auntie. And she, dude, that milk tart was still warm. I was like, what? They brought it. They introduced themselves. I said to my wife, girl, we've got the best neighbors on planet Earth. That auntie brought me a milk tart.
Let me ask you something, because, you know, race is still such a preoccupation for some South Africans. I wouldn't say for most of us because, you know, anyone who's grown up in South Africa, race is just part of your reality. You don't think about it all the time. Some people are obsessed with it, especially in the legacy media. Politicians, they make a big, race is the biggest thing in the whole world. But how often do you think about that? And how often does race become something that is an important issue to you? How often do you have to think about your own race, other races? How often do you get upset about that stuff? How often does it make you angry? Honestly, if you take your day, how many hours do you spend? Or minutes?
None. I don't even think about it. I'm just like, whatever, bro. Like, there's only one race and that's the human race. So for me, it's like, guys, my wife is white. I'm going to say like, my wife.
Oh, I didn't know that.
If you see.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, my wife is white. If you see my kids, you'll be like, hey, bro. But what's so amazing, like race, I don't even think of, bro. Like for me, it doesn't occupy my mind. It doesn't occupy my heart. But I will say this. You do get a group that lingers on it because it's a sense of identity. And it shouldn't be. It shouldn't be. Like a lot of people hold on to this thing because it's identity. You know, it's who I am. Where for me, I'm going, that's not my identity, because my identity is found in Christ. That's where my identity lies. The mere fact that, you know, growing up, having a dad, you know, fighting for the freedoms I have today, and his daughter and his grandchildren do not look like him. But what's so amazing is the level of love he has for them is unbelievable. It's like, what? You would think he would be the first to show his fist and say, I hate white people. But actually he's the first to say, I love all people. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So for me, I truly believe people have grabbed onto this as an identity. And it's like everything else in this world. You know what I mean? Everything else in this world, people are grabbing onto identities and they're forgetting that actually, no, that's not who I am. This is who I am. There's a reason why men do not understand. Yeah.
Maybe part of the reason they do that is the same reason that, you know, Colin Malachi of the ANC has to wear the LV stuff, because he doesn't have a whole lot of other stuff going on. So he's got to hold on to that, because that only sense of belonging he gets is from, you know, his tribe, his race, his group, whatever that might be.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing. Listen, we've run on for way longer than I thought. Debbie says the race, I think. That's when I'm trying to get to the loo. I just want to show you this quickly, because this just comes to thank you, Debbie. That makes everybody smile this morning. Just want to show you this quickly. Yeah, this has just come through beautiful. Now. I just saw this on social media. Look at this. So here's Lindsay Clancy on the right. Mother kills all three of her children by strangling them to death with exercise bands, claims she's the victim. $1,044,000 raised in GoFundMe. On the left, you've got mother pulls all six of her children out of a raging house fire, going back in three times, despite burns covering 93% of her body. Zero money raised. That's a sign of how screwed up our society's become. And if there's something we should all be embarrassed about, it's that should be our primary concern.
And I'm reminded of a scripture, Gareth. It says this, that we are living in a time, whatever is seen as good is seen as evil, and whatever is seen as evil is seen as good. And that is clear evidence that this is the world we are living in today, where people, a mother saving her kids. Nah, guys, nah. A mother killing her kids. Ah, guys, we must support. And it just shows us where the world is at. But it's amazing that we still have people that are living in the light that can say, guys, this is wrong. This kind of behavior? No. That mom has now, it's a third degree burns.
Yeah.
That's there forever.
93% of her body.
93%, That's there forever. And she went in there and she saved her kids' lives. That is a human being that I will be celebrating, because she put her own life on the line for her children. And you do get mothers like it. You do get mothers like it that will sacrifice alles. I don't know about you, Gareth, but my mother, say, she's an auntie, my bro. She's a rechte auntie. She will tell you, we do it the right way. We do it like this. We do it. My mother throws you with a slipper, my bro. I don't know about you. My mother, when I was naughty, she threw you with a slipper, bro. Cup you, you know that feeling. But that's love, bro. And those are the kind of mothers, you know, that I also want to just salute and say, well done. Thank you. For that mom, thank you. For the other mom, I'm so sorry for you, but nah.
So listen, where can people find you if they haven't already? Because we got to wrap this up, and I don't want them to go away thinking that's all you have to say, because you got plenty to say.
Yeah, thanks, Gareth. So for me, it's on YouTube. It will be at Common Sense SA. And then on social media, it's Andre Faro. On X, Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook, Andre Faro. Go check it out. But also, I just want to say, Gareth, I want to say this. The level of love I got from Afrikaans people, especially about that Bokkie Week, the level of love I got from Afrikaans, Kerabra. I got invited to Braai's. I don't know if you ever, but I got invited. I was like, at some point, I'm like, yo, these people don't know me, but they're inviting me to a Braai. Yeah. Like they don't, and it's not the kind of braai where they're saying to you, hey, bring your meat and your dope. No, no, no. They say, just come. Just come.
Just come.
And that is the South Africans we have in this country.
All right, dude. I love talking to you. I'm glad we finally got you on the show. Yes, and we will be following you, so you on all of your own stuff and on the Truth Report stuff that you do from time to time as well. And we'll catch up soon. Nice to see you.
Wonderful. Thank you, Gareth. And also Thank just a big up to your team. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, man.
God bless.
Yeah, good. Thanks, dude. Cheers. All right, that's it. We've got no more time. We've gone over by another 25 minutes, 26 minutes. We try to give you as much as we can on the show, and that's why it doesn't have an end point. The show starts at 6. It ends whenever it ends. And if we've got interesting people on, like Andre, last week's guest, the week before, then we keep talking, man. Got really good feedback on Nikki last week talking about sex, so we probably have to get her back on it soon. And if you have suggestions, anyone you want us to have on the show, anyone who fascinates you, you think would make for interesting conversation, let us know. Just send me an email, gareth@garethcliff.com, or you can send James or J9, just the J and the 9, @garethcliff.com, an email, and we'll get back to you. Monday, we'll be back with another daily briefing, and it's the last day of August on Monday. So subscriptions start on the Tuesday. Also, if you are around this weekend and you want to know what's happening with that mental health symposium that's going on, the Integrative Mental Health Symposium, you can go and check that out in Cape Town tomorrow and in Joburg on Joburg Sunday. You can find out more in the description of this episode. We will speak to you next week. Have an awesome weekend, everybody. I'm going to be in Malta from Sunday, just for 5 days. So I'll be back on Saturday next week. I'm looking forward to seeing you on Friday's show. We'll be doing it live from Valletta in Malta, which is always exciting. So stick around. We'll catch you then. Ciao.